At Emory University, we believe in those with the ambition to achieve, the passion to learn, and the optimism to see the possibilities ahead. Founded on a belief that the wise heart seeks knowledge, an Emory education combines experiential learning in Atlanta and beyond with unrivaled collaboration and discovery, all to prepare you for a world that needs your leadership. Learn more at emory.edu.
This fall, fall in love with Cozy. Nothing says autumn like wrapping up in the rich, warm colors of Minky Couture. From golden ambers to deep burgundy and rustic browns, Minky blankets bring the beauty of the season right into your home. Perfect for crisp evenings, family time, or gifting someone special. Fall in love with Minky and shop your favorite fall colors today at minkycouture.com.
Now on UK Health Radio, treat yourself to an upgrade. Pack away your low self-esteem. Leave behind that empty feeling. Stow your fears and doubts in the overhead locker. And go from stress to authentic success with Danielle Sachs.
Hello to you, dear you out there who is taking, I'm talking to you. Yes, I know that you are taking your health seriously, that you believe that you have control over your health, over your well-being, over your stress, over your authentic success. Otherwise, you wouldn't listen to this show. So congratulations. And you can really give yourself a big hug for doing this, for really investing time and energy in getting to know more about all these subjects that have to do with stress and authentic success. And I'm, for one, really honored that you are listening to this show. And I trust that today I can really give you some tips, some stories, some advice. And we are going to talk about something that I haven't talked about in a long time. And that is the stress that we experience in our relationship with our partners. Now, couples in distress is really something that I see a lot in my practice. And of course, when somebody comes to work on themselves, somebody who is stuck, somebody who is in burnout, somebody is in a crisis, of course, it often has to do with the relationship with themselves. That's quite logical. But it also really often has to do with the relationship that they have with their partners or their children or their bosses. And today, so I am so excited to bring to you an expert, Dr. Dan Kolobinski, who is a principal therapist at One Bright for One. And I think his expertise there includes the mood and the anxiety disorders, particularly PTSD and generalized anxiety disorder. But also Dan works is a psychotherapist working after he moved into the UK, working with, as I say, interpersonal relationships, working with couples in distress to help mend bridges and strengthen communication. Now, if you know me a little bit longer for now, because this is more than 2 years now that I've been doing this show, you know that communication is a big thing for me. Communication with yourselves, communication with others. And I, for one, have been doing for about 5-6 years huge trainings in nonviolent communication from Marshall Rosenberg. And I really, really suggest that you go and look it up, or if you are interested to do a one-day workshop somewhere. And I'm sure that I'm going to have more experts on that in my future shows. But today, I specifically want to ask you to really listen in here, because we are going to talk about something that you and I, we both struggle with. And I'm not saying struggle always in the negative way, but it is an important thing to have that amazing relationship with our partners. And I know here in Belgium that in my practice, I see it all the time, how people have conflicts and living in true stress and crisis with their partners and what it does to themselves, to their families, to their children. So I'm quite excited to talk about this subject this week. And as I say, I really found an amazing expert, Dr. Dan. And I am sure that after this little break, we are going to talk about a lot of practical things, a lot of how he sees it after so many years of expertise, what he advises us to do. And I can't wait to share this conversation with you so that you, for the week to come, can maybe focus a little bit on your partner relationship. Why not? It's not always about stress. It's not always about ourselves. Sometimes it's also important to open our eyes, to open our ears, and to be there for the people we love, to be there for them, see them, hear them, understand them. And so I can't wait to see what Dr. Dan has to tell us about our connection with our partners inside the couple. I will talk to you just now after this little break.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Yes, we are back talking to Dr. Dan Kolobinski. Welcome, Dr. Dan.
Yeah, thank you very much.
Well, let's just jump in. And I'm going to ask you, you are an expert in a few things, but we would like to talk about today, as I said in the intro, mostly about couples in distress, because the listening out there, there's somebody out there listening now who is feeling distressed because of the relationship, their partner relationship. Can you tell us a little bit about how does one know that they are in distress because of their relationship?
I think it's a good place to start. The thing to think about with relationships generally, and I think this is just as true for romantic relationships, which we'll largely be talking about, as well as other connections that humans have, is that there's a metaphor I always like to start off with when I work with a couple, that we refer to what we call the emotional bank account. And essentially what we mean by that is every time something positive is done or said in a relationship, it's a little bit like putting a deposit into the account in pounds, in euros, whatever it might be. And every time something negative is done, it's like taking a withdrawal out of that account. Now, if you put in a pound and you take out a pound, it doesn't take a degree in high finance to realize that there isn't any savings there. And one would always expect that account to be growing in time, more going in than coming out. And a lot of times what ends up happening with couples is that they aren't really aware of what currency their partner might want those deposits in. I think we look at our relationships.
Said. I really love the way you explain it. Yeah.
It's a really simple, but I think really quite effective idea. And what's really challenging, I think, in relationships a lot of times is people get really upset because there are efforts that are being made. But part of the problem is sometimes that we follow this very basic concept of the golden rule. You know, we hear about this since childhood. It's important to treat people the way that you want to be treated. And I think it turns out to be really bad relationship advice, though, because it's so much more important to treat the other person the way that they want to be treated. So if I'm doing something for my partner that I would expect my partner to do for me, I might not necessarily get the credit into that account that I'm thinking, because that's not necessarily the way my partner would want to receive that care.
Is it because we all have a different love language as well?
It's an interesting concept. So there was a book that was written about 25 years ago and called The Five Love Languages, saying that there are these five different themes. And some people might have come across that already, and there are quizzes you can do online for that. And things like, some people like physical touch, some people like quality time, some people like gifts or acts of service. And what I think is interesting around that is, I don't know the scientific efficacy about whether or not there is something to be said about that, but I think it's a really great conversation starter, just in terms of those differences. That the ideal relationship, of course, would be the one where I like to give care in the way my partner likes to receive care, but that doesn't always happen. And sometimes I think for some relationships, there do have to be some very hard conversations around what your partner is looking for in terms of what that deposit might be. So coming back to your question, I think that couples do end up finding themselves over time drifting apart because they're perhaps not quite getting the credit that they're expecting in terms of the efforts that are being made, or just sometimes, frankly, we think that love is enough and I don't really need to put in that effort. They should just know that I do care. And that's not quite how things work. And so as time does go on, we get further and further apart from each other. And so I think that sense of closeness, do I think my partner understands me? Do I think my partner has my back? Do I think my partner gets where I'm coming from? These are all questions that we can ask, that fundamentally are coming down to, well, what is the state of that emotional bank account? And when we get below a certain ratio, shall we say, if you have about 20 nice things for every, sometimes we can be a bit critical, negative. That happens all the time, and that's perfectly fine. That's not a problem. But as long as there are so many more deposits going into that account, we can absorb those blows when things get negative. But what we have found in research is that about five positive deposits into an account can be wiped out with one negative
Yes,
comment.
I agree.
And all of a sudden, we get to a point where we're not quite at that level of savings that we would need to be. And it's like there's this switch that flicks. All of a sudden, we don't give our partner the benefit of the doubt anymore. We don't really think that they're on our side or they understand us. And so no conversation in any given moment takes place by itself. It's always a product of what that bank account looks like over
Wow.
time, over the history of the relationship.
Can you tell me a little bit the symptoms of that come with someone feeling that the partnership, that bank account is empty or that it's in debt or whatever? What are the symptoms that are going on in somebody's emotional? How does a person in your practice come? What kind of symptoms are they?
I think that the biggest one people would identify with is having a sense of loneliness. That as very, very social creatures, we really are quite sensitive to the state of those relationships and the bonds that we do have with other people. And when we're in a situation like that, there's a sense of loneliness, sometimes even a sense of a fight or flight arousal and almost a bit of an anxiety reaction in some cases, largely because there's a sense of threat to the relationship. And I don't know how my partner is going to react in certain situations, or I am expecting that it's going to be negative, and we're not feeling safe and content anymore. It's the opposite of that. So there's a little bit more of that rather negative sense of arousal, and also, yeah, the sense of loneliness. And again, there's a difference between loneliness and being alone, that I can be in a crowded room and yet still feel isolated. And I can be physically by myself and yet still feel connected to the people around me. So I think when the relationship is in a bad place, there can be that real growing sense of isolation and loneliness.
Wow. So are you saying that it can lead even to worse things like depression or anxiety disorders or that kind of thing?
There's a strong, really strong relationship between relationship satisfaction and depression. Anxiety disorders that they anxiety disorders can perhaps exacerbate some things that, again, people aren't feeling safe. That can impact the interaction between two people. But with depression, there's a much stronger circularity there that when I'm in a solid relationship, that can be a real protective factor against depression. And so when we start to see things go south, then perhaps we're feeling more of that again, that sense of isolation, that depression can really start to creep in. But then the depression itself can also feed into that relationship
Of
because, by
course.
definition, people are less motivated. They might be more negative and seeing the worst, and we get this tendency to assume the bad thing, and that can feed into the whatever problems are in the relationship. So those two are really, really strongly connected.
Wow. It's actually the first time that I'm talking about that liaison, that link, because is a depression so it, I can understand it because as human beings, we need to belong, we need to be connected, we need to, so if we feel, so that's where we are actually in a kind of tunnel and having no light at the end of the tunnel when the relationship, is that a little bit what you're illustrating here? That the relationship, there's no end of the tunnel, so the relationship gets worse and worse and people are feeling worse and worse. Is that what you're saying?
Yeah, well, there's a sense of security, I think, that comes from a good, solid relationship. And again, we can use that term very broadly. That's true with family members, friends, and what have you. If I and with that comes a sense of predictability that if we're in that good place and we have a good number of deposits going into that bank account with very few withdrawals, then I'm much more likely to think that you understand me, you get me. You have my back, and I will see that from a prediction point of view. If we think about the way the mind works, thinking about, well, I don't know what's to come in the future, but I'm pretty sure that you're still going to be there and we're going to be solid and this relationship has value. And all of a sudden, when we start questioning those things, we start to spiral in the other way, largely because I don't know what's going to happen. I don't know how this relationship is going. I don't know what's really going on in your mind. I don't know what I can expect from our interactions. And fundamentally, one of the basic foundations of any relationship is how much brain space I have dedicated to my partner, to my partner's life, to their hopes, their dreams, their events that they did last Tuesday. And all of a sudden that starts to get smaller and smaller, the worse that relationship is.
Oh, wow. So can you tell us an example or a story or something about a couple in distress and how they dealt with it?
Well, I've seen many couples over my career, and I think one of the growing themes with most of them is this sense that there's a tendency, I think, for us to almost assume that, well, everything is going to be okay, and so we don't really need to necessarily put in that effort. And I'm thinking about one particular couple where they had a really lovely courtship and spent a fair amount of years together. Got married the first couple of years of marriage, absolutely fine and going well. And then all of a sudden, life started to get in the way. It's the tendency for most relationships is to start off with a good, strong friendship and then to try
Yes.
and incorporate this business element to it. House has to be paid for, or rent, mortgage, whatever it might be. Kids have to be raised. And all of a sudden, it becomes more of a job. And thinking about this one particular couple where in this relationship, they were a real powerhouse in their social circle, that they were the them and one other couple were sort of the core of a much wider social group. And all of a sudden, when children did come into the picture, there is a tendency, I think, for most couples to start to incorporate that business element to it and just shift into this role of being parents. And
Yes.
the one particular couple that really struggled with that, where particularly with the man in that couple, all stereotypes aside, that really struggled with that sense of parenthood and losing that sense of whether it's about freedom or
Yes.
the enjoyment of going out
Yes.
and again being that hub that everyone seemed to revolve around. And so they ended up really having a hard time as she got more into parenting. Of course, what comes with that is having to withdraw from some of those social engagements. And they weren't on the same page. They didn't have decent conversations around what that meant for them or how they would redefine what that relationship stood for. And as a result of that, several years into to having kids, that there was no sense of team, no sense of us. And both of them really feeling quite defensive and attacked by the other person because they didn't have the tools to be able to have conversations around why these things were so important to them. There's nothing necessarily wrong with, although I'm sure many of the listeners here might really identify with the mother and say to the father what's going on. But I think even in a case like that, it would be necessary for him to make that transition and into shift into being that responsible parent, shall we say, which was always the accusation that was thrown at him. But it did come from an understandable desire or want or need to feel included in some of those social engagements. Now, how they could have been able to synthesize those two things was the main aim of treatment, which they eventually did get to. And sometimes you have to miss out on certain things.
Yes.
But that fear of it'll never be like it was, it doesn't, that doesn't, that can be true on some levels, and yet we can still capture some of what was important to us. So for him, that feeling, that sense of inclusion, that sense of joy that he got from being the center of that social
Yes.
sphere, he
Yes.
could do that and be a father at the same time. That was possible,
Of
but it
course.
wasn't a conversation that they were able to have on their own. They needed some help with that.
So Am I hearing well when you are talking about it's all about understanding your own needs and expressing your needs to the partner, to the other person, and finding a level there of everybody fulfilling their, you know, that their needs are fulfilled in some way or another? Is it that's what it's all about?
That is a very good way of putting it. And I think that not only are people really bad at being able to communicate that, a lot of times we're not even really aware of what those needs are.
I
And
agree.
part of the issue, yeah, with this couple is that that's just how it was. He didn't have to think about it too much because he just woke up and every day was like the last one until it wasn't. So the system worked until it didn't, is the phrase I like to use. And so to be honest with ourselves around what those needs are, and I'd want to be clear with a couple and say that those needs tend to be rather abstract, which is one of the issues that we're talking about things like, well, what does freedom mean? What
Yes.
does security mean? What
Yes.
does togetherness mean? And why are those important? Now, a lot of that will come from past experiences and things that have gone on in their own family of origin, what they saw growing up, and it shapes what we like to refer to as our framework, the way we see the world.
Yes.
And a lot of times it's the fact that couples will have differences in that framework, but not have the words to be able to express that, that can lead them down these paths where now they're feeling misunderstood or hard done by or even attacked by their partner.
I have a question also about, because I see, you know, individuals in my practice, but it's always also talked about the relationship, of course, you know, any relationship, like you say, first of all, the relationship with yourself. But are you saying that a lot of these couples in distress, it would be better to ask for help because they can't see it on their own what is needed and how they can get out of the distress? Would you recommend that they go into a deeper level and go and get help?
There are
Anyone
different
listening
degrees
now,
of
you
help.
see, feeling, I mean, I really think it's important to address that because we still feel like looking for help is weak. And certainly when it comes to our partner relationship, like, you know, nobody needs to know and it's all fine. But how do you feel about that?
I do think that just about any couple would benefit from a few sessions with a therapist just to give them some of the tools to be able to have these conversations in an appropriate way. So I work with a wide range of stages in relationships, and I have a particular focus around pre-marriage counseling or relationship enrichment in the beginning when things are really good. I always like the line that it's important to fix the roof when the sun is shining. So while we're in a good place, let's be really clear about that. However, I think that it's important to recognize that a lot of couples won't do that or
Of
didn't do
course.
that, didn't have that chance because it just again, I think there's a lack of no, it's an element of faith, I guess. You know, it's coming from a good place that if you think about a 42% divorce rate that we have here in the UK, that's about 2 out of every 5 couples that
Wow.
you've ever every wedding that you've been to, about 40% of them don't end up lasting. And no one ever thinks on the day that
No.
well, that'll be us. We'll be everyone thinks that we'll be fine. But yeah, I think to have some guidance, but there are plenty of books out there as well people could read that I would get away from magazines and quizzes perhaps, but books that are written by some very capable therapists that can again provide a support. It doesn't necessarily have to be in front of a therapist. That can be really challenging for some people.
Yeah, I agree. But isn't that what we need to bring down the barrier, whether it's working on yourself, whether it's working in the relationship, whether it's what we do. I mean, I always say, you know, when you want to play tennis and you want to play, you know, competitive tennis, you go and find, you know, a trainer, a coach, somebody, a teacher, somebody who teaches you that. Why wouldn't you do it? Why only do it when it goes wrong? You know?
That's a very
And
good way of
that's
putting
a,
it.
yeah, and that's a little bit what you say. And I've just put it down because I really like that. Like, fix the roof when the sun is shining. I mean, go for a stronger roof, you know, instead of, yeah, instead of waiting for it to rain. And can I ask a personal question? What has it taught you to all these years, you know, treat people and couples in distress and people with anxiety. What has it taught you, Dr. Dan?
I think one of the biggest lessons I think was around this, you know, coming back to your when you mentioned the five love languages, being really quite clear about what those needs are and how to be able to express those. So I'd been in a relationship where we had I think a, shall we say, a miscommunication around what those love languages were, and unfortunately that relationship didn't end up lasting. I'm with someone right now where we think there is a bit of a better connection. Now that doesn't necessarily mean that any relationship is insurmountable or doomed to fail as a result of that. But I think that really, I think, strikes me. So those deposits into the bank account, what they are, what we're willing to do in order to be able to get that credit, is really defined by the person we pick. And I really like this line. There was a psychologist who said this about 40 years ago, Dan Weil, who said that when you pick a partner, you pick a set of problems. And I use that line quite often, with a bit of a smile on my face, that there'll always be problems. It's just a question of, are these the problems in the relationship that I want to be dealing with for the next however many years? And the answer, a lot of times, will be no. So I think one thing that really stands out for me with couple therapy, it's really tricky compared to individual work. If someone comes in with mood disorder, depression, or coming in with an anxiety disorder, the idea is to try and reduce those symptoms. We have measures. You fill in a questionnaire at the beginning, fill in a question at the end. You would expect there to be the change. But relationships don't quite work that way. That there, we do have relationship satisfaction questionnaires that we can give to couples. But sometimes the aim of therapy is to decide in a very educated way that whether or not this is the kind of relationship I'd like to be in, and do I want to continue with this person? And that can be a hard truth to come to the other side of that. And in good faith, yes, I'd like to, but realizing that the chances of me getting the relationship I would like to be a part of might be dwindling, and maybe it's not worth it. And I think that's a very hard question, but it is a, I think, a useful one to ask. And that's, again, from a personal point of view as well, a question that I and many people do have to ask themselves: is this somewhere that I'd like to continue to be? Do I feel safe here? Do I feel understood? Do I think my partner gets me? Is that ever going to change? Is it likely to? And sometimes the answer to that is no.
So again, it has to do with the needs. Am I heard? Am I understood? Am I
Exactly.
seen? Am I?
Yeah.
So it's again those basic core needs of a human being that we need to look at, is it?
Yeah, exactly. Well, fundamentally, there was one of the big archetypal researchers in this area is a gentleman named John Gottman, who Professor Gottman works out of the University of Washington in Seattle, and he has this lab that I don't know if he's still, he might be retired by now, but for many decades he had an apartment, a flat in Seattle that couples would go to, referred to as the Love Lab. He has a lot of lovely, colorful
Oh,
language.
amazing, yeah.
Yeah, it's really, really quite nice. And this idea, I think, that he described, I think around, oh my goodness, we might need to edit this. I forgot the question. What was it? Where was I going with this?
No problem. It's you were saying the difference with the couple therapy. First of the one-on-one, you reduce the symptoms, then the therapy couple, do I want this relationship? And I'm not sure now where you wanted to get with, but the guy
But
really
it was just your
inspired you.
question. Yeah, it was your question. It was something you had said.
It's okay.
No.
It's okay. I don't even know myself what what the question was, because I think our conversation is flowing so nicely. So
Oh, that's fine. That's fine. That's
it
fine.
doesn't really
Thank you.
matter, but I just want you to finish off what you, the guy th that you mentioned, the
Yeah,
with
there
the
was a
love lab,
specific reason why I was,
with the
yeah, I was like,
flat, what.
That's what it was. It was, yeah, well, your question, and this is what we can edit back into, is you were asking about the needs, about having a need.
Yes.
So John Gottman had this lab that he had couples come in, and he'd watch them for a little while and look at very meticulous detail of what they did and how they interacted with each other. And he's the one who came up with this idea that you have 20 deposits for every withdrawal, and if
Yes.
it gets below 5 to 1, then we have a bit of a problem. And he wrote this book quite a while ago now, called The 7 Principles for Making Marriage Work, and
Oh.
very popular book that he that he wrote, and he defines these seven different traits that the good couples seem to have that the couples that didn't really
Yes.
go well didn't have. And he used what I really quite like, the Anna Karenina principle. He said Anna Karenina by Tolstoy starts off with every happy family looks the same, and every unhappy family is different in their own way. And he had this sort of idea, you know, that is based in science, that actually seems to be the case, that the happy couples have all these seven things going for them, and they all look the same, but any of those seven can go wrong, and it's going to cause its own dysfunction. Well, he
Wow.
wrote this follow-up several years later, and he said, well, you know those seven things that I said? It's actually not that. It really does boil down to one thing, and that is the question, do I think my partner has my back? So,
Oh.
although, yeah, that's the real foundational predictor of relationship satisfaction is, do I think my partner gets me? Do they have my best interest at heart? Are they working for my dreams while I try and work for theirs?
So is it also a factor of trust?
Big
Like,
one, absolutely, yeah. Yeah, so
and having
trust
those
is an interesting.
core needs met, that's what you were talking about I
Exactly.
am seen, I'm heard. But is it a little bit then about the trust? Because I feel people come to me, and I just wanna say that it's often about no more trust in the universe, in life, in that's where people get stuck. And so is that the same in a relationship, that trust is lacking? I'm not trusting so much my
Massively.
partner anymore. Is that a little bit what you
Massively, massively. So that well, I come back to what I was saying before about when that bank account is good, we use that in order to be able to predict what future interactions will be like.
Yes.
And trust essentially is the mechanism that we have in order to be able to deal with uncertainty, that the future isn't written and tomorrow could be different.
Yes.
Maybe the sun won't rise. It probably will. We all trust that the sun will rise tomorrow. And it's the same thing with our relationship, is that I don't necessarily know where my partner is right now, but I do
Right.
trust that she has
Yes.
my best interest at heart, and she's acting within that. And this is, I think, a really really foundational. So how we build trust, this is my own definition of this, is that trust is built when we put ourselves in a place where we can be hurt and we're not. And so by its very definition, it does involve a risk that we end up taking, which could be really challenging for some people for many reasons. But when that risk is rewarded with bad things not happening,
Yeah.
then trust in that relationship really does build.
And as it to do also with vulnerability, that I'm making myself vulnerable by telling my truth, by telling what I need, by and that is a risk, but that's the only way the relationship can actually really work.
Absolutely. Well, I think with that vulnerability, again, it's that foundation of safety that my partner gets me, and that I won't be hurt if I'm able to, and use this word very specifically, but be able to expose myself to whether it is about a fear of ridicule, a fear of rejection, whatever it might be. And when we do that, that doesn't necessarily mean our partners have to agree with everything that we have to say, but they can listen and respect that. And again, if they don't, that might say quite a bit about the future of that relationship.
If anyone listening now is thinking, wow, there's a lot of things I need to about that bank account. I'm just thinking about that bank account. Do you have any tips on how to get the savings into the bank account and not in the debt, and how to get out of the debt? Are there any, what kind of first step would you say if somebody feels, ooh, I'm in debt in that bank account, our relationship, what kind of first step would you advise?
The first one is to acknowledge what that balance is in that bank account, and to have a what could be a very challenging conversation with the partner over what their expectations are. And I think that when I see a couple and they both acknowledge that they're in the red, then I kind of give them a little bit of credit, because the harder relationships tend to be the ones where one person's in the red, but the other person isn't.
Listen.
One person might think everything is fine and I like the relationship just how it is, and yet the other person feels like they're drowning, that they're not able to be heard or feel connected. So I think having that very direct conversation with a partner around, well, where do you think, if you're listening to this right now, maybe explain this metaphor to your partner, and ask each other, and be okay with the fact that it might not be in a good place right now. The good news is that doesn't fate doesn't mean that you're going to be fated to have to separate. But you can't really make any change unless you recognize what needs to be changed. And then I would follow that up then with an important conversation around what those deposits into the bank account do look like. And again, this is where you might have quizzes online. The Five Love Languages is a book by an American pastor named Gary Chapman. And again, I think it's a really good conversation starter to highlight the differences between people.
I
And I
think it
would
needs a
really,
lot of courage, though, Dr. Dan. I
it
mean,
really does. It
it
does.
does. It's not evident, hey, to start asking, where do you think our bank account is at the moment? You know, our emotional bank account, of course, which might be often also in relationship with the normal bank account. Do you think
It can well be.
can
It
be,
can
hey?
be. Well, personal finances are one of the big money
It's a
and
big stressor.
work-life balance, exactly. Big factors, I think, in relationship distress. And again, I think you're not necessarily anyone's fault per se, but like circumstances do mean that we can't put we do take the eye off the ball, off the relationship, and we're not always having it at the forefront because bills have to be paid and things have to be done. So that's important. But I think again, coming back to then what those deposits could very well be or what could be different, what we're looking for. As you said before, needs is at the very heart of this. So what needs might not be met? And if that is a very difficult conversation to have, then it might be useful to be able to get some support, get some help, and have someone guide you through that. So the three areas that I tend to work on with a couple are caring, communication, and conflict management are essentially the three pillars of couple therapy. And so communication being that middle ground that bridges the gap between the caring, which are those deposits, and the conflict management, which tends to be a lot of the withdrawals when people are fighting, when they are acting out, when they don't think their needs are met, and they're seeing their partner or their relationship as a threat. And how do we manage that so we can have, again, those productive conversations?
So, just to summarize a little bit what we've been talking about, I really love the metaphor with the bank account. So, how would you, if somebody is, let's say, the listener out there is in a relationship, the younger generation, let's say 25, 30, 35 years old, or whoever, because you can be in a new relationship at 45 and 55 as well.
Absolutely.
But what would you give them as an advice on that bank, emotional bank account? So they are feeling they are in love. So their emotional bank account for the moment is absolutely going strong most of the time in the beginning. What would be an advice to them to prevent from going into the negative? What would you
This
say
is
there?
a really good one of the best efforts we can make, I think, is recognizing where things are going well, and why they're going well. So the reason why we end up with someone in the first place, there are many different reasons why someone might choose a partner, but one of the massive reasons are because this person does meet my needs in the beginning. And if there isn't a sense of awareness around what those needs are for ourselves, then we might not even recognize when the partner stops doing it. I have a friend of mine many years ago. She looked at her husband over a dinner table. I tell this story quite often. And she just out of the blue just said, "I should sue you for false advertising." And it really was this recognition for her that all of the lovely stuff he did in the beginning of the relationship to woo her, to court her, to impress her, 3 kids in, and just wasn't
No
happening
more.
anymore. And he, and again, not necessarily his fault per se. Life got in the way. We got really busy, but it was her recognition that that he took that eye off the ball and wasn't depositing in her currency anymore. As far as I'm aware, they're still fine. They were able to get past that. That conversation was about 20 years ago, but it was a pivotal moment, I think, for her to recognize that I didn't even realize that he just wasn't doing those things until one day I woke up and realized I wasn't happy. So I think that those couples who are in a good place right now, be really quite clear on why. What is it that the other person is doing? And we want to reinforce that behavior. I don't want to sound like too much like a psychologist here, but express appreciation and say thank you, because that does
It's
mean
the
that
little
the person's more
things,
likely to
hey?
keep doing it. It
Yeah,
really
it's the
is.
little
Gratitude.
things. Appreciation, I see you.
Exactly.
That kind of confirmation, appreciation, all the things we actually need as a human being, all of us need it. So it's, and I also want to say to to you, listener out there, that it's as important that you give it to yourself as that you give it to others. I do believe that it starts there, because the better version you are of yourself, the better version you're going to be as a partner as well. So maybe can you finish this conversation with a quote or a statement that you stand by? Just one sentence, one word, something that anyone out there now listening and has something to think about this week.
I go back to Dan Wyle. There's another line that he said before that I think it's important for couples to have the conversations that they're meant to have. A lot of times when people are arguing about especially some of those smaller things, the what they call the ridiculous things, the stupid things, I can't believe we're even fighting about this. It's never about those things. It's about what those things represent. And again, things like freedom, security, whatever it might be. And so if there's any consideration around that, why is it that my partner's behavior bothers me so much? I think we have to look more inward and understand ourselves in order to be able to express what need isn't being met. And
Beautiful.
that's a hard thing to come to terms with sometimes.
Thank you so much, Dr. Dan.
You
Really
bet.
appreciate this conversation. I'm going to have a little break and then we'll come back after the break just now. Thank you so much.
Thank you very much.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
UK Health Radio,
the station that makes you feel good.
Thank you for coming back to me. And as I promised you in the beginning, this was a beautiful conversation on something totally different that we haven't talked about so much, but that can really, really affect you and I in our lives. Because everything that we do, we are human beings, we are social human beings. We need that partnership. We need those relationships to work, to for our well-being, to feel fulfilled. So I was quite excited when Dr. Dan compared that, used that metaphor about the emotional bank account. Have you thought about that? Is your emotional bank account with your partner, with your loved ones, in a on a positive or on a negative? Are you saving or are you in debt? It's quite a beautiful question to ask yourself. And so, of course, it all has to do with, like he said, with our five love languages. If you know that your partner really is love language, is more of little surprises and, for example, quality time, then it's less important for him or her that you are going to use your love language. Try to do what he needs, what she needs. I really liked it when he explained to us that we need at least five, I think even six positive inputs to break even with one negative. And that is huge to me. So all those symptoms that we experience when we are in a relationship of distress, the anxiety, the loneliness, the not feeling safe, it's actually amazing when you link the depression to the relationship between two partners. I really, if you liked that comparison, maybe you can go and look in the outside world and see. If you have to do sometimes with depressed people, maybe you can have a look on how it is that they are in their relationships, because there is a huge link, as Dr. Dan explained. And of course, it's all about the needs. What is it that your partner needs? Do not always focus on what it is that you need, but go and have that amazing, courageous conversation, what he talked about. What does it mean to you to have a meaningful relationship? Does not mean that it has the same thing as what it means to your partner. And all that can bring a lot of stress in the situation, because if we only care about our own needs that are met, it is a strain. And so we need to put ourselves in the place of the other person. Isn't it amazing that in the UK, he was talking about the UK research and the rates, the divorce rates, 42% of the marriages result in a divorce. I think that is absolutely huge. And after 42 years of marriage, I can tell you that, of course, there has been times where my husband and I were in distress, where our bank account was really, really maybe not in balance, but we worked on it so regularly and actually almost daily that we could have those conversations and that we could work it out and put a lot of positive into the emotional bank account. Now, I didn't know that there was a book called The Seven Principles for Making a Marriage Work. And I think it's actually for you out there. If you are in a stage where you think it's important to start working on your marriage or asking questions about, is this the right partner for me or not? Maybe a book like Dr. Dan said can give you some advice. And so that for one is maybe a book that you can use. Now, of course, trust in any relationship, even in the relationship with yourself, with the universe. If you don't trust life, if you don't trust the universe, if you don't trust yourself, there cannot be a good relationship. The same goes into couples. If you don't trust each other, then of course, that already is a basic problem, not a problem, a challenge. Because trust is one of those basic needs that we all have. And if we cannot be vulnerable in our relationship, that for sure is one that mostly women, I think, you know, need to be able to be vulnerable, to explain emotional intelligence, what it is to them, the emotional impact of certain things. I think that is really important. Now, Dr. Dan was advising us, you and I, to acknowledge when we are in the red. Now, I'm going to ask you that question for this week. Where do you think you are in your bank account, in your relationship with your partner? And if you don't have a partner, maybe you can think about your relationship with yourself or with your boss or your colleague or someone who is important to you. You need to have that important conversation. And of course, it takes courage. It takes persistence. It takes to be out of the comfort zone to go and have that conversation of where are we and why is it going well or why is it not going well? You need to have that conversation. And I'm going to be honest with you. I'm going to have that conversation with my husband this weekend. Although we have had that conversation regularly, I think after this interview, I'm going to really have a deep conversation with him about our love languages, about how does he see it? What does he need? How can we make our bank account even stronger? That emotional bank account so strong that there's even more resilience. There's even more basic trust and basic love. Even after 42 years of marriage, I believe that you can still work on it. And so Dr. Dan has three pillars: caring, communication, and conflict management, the three C's that he works on with couples. And I believe that he even does couple retreat like weekends of 3 days. So if you want to go and connect with him, you can do that either do through One Bright, which is a beautiful organization that I talked about before in my shows. And the personal website is reconnectuk.com. So if you want to know more about Dr. Dan, that's where you can reach him. But he insists that we have the conversation that we are meant to have, and not just when things seem going a little bit off or when we feel that there's some wobbly things going on in the relationship. We also need to do this when things are going well, even in the beginning of the relationship, or maybe before we get married or things like that. In the first months or years that everything is going well, maybe that is the time to have these conversations so we know what to do when the bank account is getting emptier. I think it's a really good advice. It's the same thing with working on yourself. Why only working on yourself when there's a crisis, when you are in stress, when you are in burnout? No, you and I, we know now that we need to do those things also when we are feeling well, when there is a good feeling, a happy feeling. We can also ask ourselves the serious questions when things are going well, not just when things are going wrong. So I trust that this has given you a little bit of to think about, a little bit to like the metaphor of the emotional bank account. How many pounds or how many euros are there in your bank account with your partner? I really, really love that. And I'm sure there's a link between the emotional bank account and the true financial bank account. That's also one to consider. And I trust that you have really some things to think about this week, that you enjoyed this conversation I had with Dr. Dan. You can listen to it all over again, and I will see you next week with another show. Bye-bye for now.
From Stress to Authentic Success was presented by Danielle Sachs. Join Danielle at the same time next week here on UK Health Radio. And meanwhile, for more on how to thrive in business and everyday life by being true to yourself, go to daniellesachs.com.